Dolly Parton might be one of the most famous women in the United States. She's one of our great country singers. She produces television, including an upcoming Netflix series, and she's got her own theme park. And now, inevitably, she's the subject of a podcast called Dolly Parton's America.
The 9-episode series from Jad Abumrad of Radiolab talks about Parton's life, her music, her home, and what she means to other people. I'm Stephen Thompson.
And I'm Linda Holmes. And today on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR, we're talking about Dolly Parton's America. Here with me and Stephen in the studio is Glenn Weldon of NPR's Arts Desk. Hey, Glenn.
Hey, Linda.
And in our fourth chair, a Dolly Parton fan, writer Katie Presley. Hi, Katie.
Howdy.
Always a pleasure to have you back. Glenn, I'm going to start with you. So this series, because it has Radiolab DNA and sort of classic public radio storytelling DNA, has a very particular sound to it, but it's also a chance to revisit the human who is Dolly Parton. Mm-hmm. What did you think?
I like this a lot. And those things I don't, or that I like less, I completely understand what they're doing there. You know, in the model of Radiolab and This American Life and Serial, this production approach. If you like it, you call it immersive and rich. And if you don't like it, you call it overproduced. Now, I understand where the impulse to layer sound upon sound like that comes in. You're trying to surround your listener with the audio soundscape. You're trying to make them make subconscious connections that maybe you'll address later. Because your goal is to usher them into this place that you've set up for them. And when it works, you don't notice it's happening. But when it doesn't work, you get a clip like this.
One of the things that makes Dollywood and Dolly in general just a tiny bit hard to pin down is that these stories are hers, they're from her life, but they also have a very overt Disney sheen to them. Like at one point she told me,
I'm almost like a Cinderella story. People still want to believe that there is magic, that I did sweep the hearth.
Yeah, okay, now what is that doing there?
I'm making a subconscious connection between Dolly Parton.
Yeah.
This is the thing. What is that in service of? I don't know. In terms of tone, this also shares that same approach where you get this kind of heightened credulity, I would say, this deep enthusiasm for the subject, and you're hearing the interviewer as much as you're hearing the interviewee here.
Maybe more. Probably more.
A lot more. We'll come back to that, I'm sure. But, like, I totally get that because you're trying to bring the reader along. Now, I happen to know, and I'm also not going to mess with that too much because I happen to know that my factory default settings for enthusiasm are set a lot lower than most people's. So to me, sincere enthusiasm often reads as performative and fake. I don't have a good measure for that.
How do you like me?
Yeah.
How has this worked?
Why I don't date actors. And finally, in the narrative, every episode has a little arc and arrives at a moment of insight, which I call the Sex and the City, Carrie at her laptop, and I couldn't help but wonder moment. And you have to lay the right amount of track. Now, what this is doing, because it's such a popular subject and it's popular podcast, is it's laying a lot of track that it might not need to lay. There's a whole discussion in the very beginning, in the very first episode, about, you know, we should really focus on her lyrics and her music, not her persona. It's like, duh. I mean, like, who is that for? That is for people who still see her as, you know, the cartoon that was on the on television in the 70s. So you're widening out. This is not, you know, podcasting traditionally narrow casting. This is broadcasting. So I understand what it's all doing there. I like a lot of it. Some of the stuff, you know, not for me.
Gotcha. How about you, Katie?
Well, I came in, as you mentioned, huge Dolly fan and fascinated because I think there is so much there with her. And I don't even, what I mean by that, it turns out, can't really be gotten at by interviewing her. So I am definitely on team, this is probably overproduced.
Team too much reverb.
Too much reverb.
And leaps and bloops.
So many 10 seconds, like it feels like 10 seconds, it feels like 10 minutes. It's probably like 4 second silences, but they're so extreme that sometimes I think the, you know, I like hit the dial to see if I've done something wrong. They pull me right out of it. And some math that kind of helped me is at one point Jad mentions that he talks to her for about 2 hours. He gets about 2 hours with her. And then at another point in the Tennessee Trance episode, he mentions, I asked her one question and she spoke for 90 minutes. And I was like, oh, well, that only leaves you 30. And he says 90 minutes and I didn't get a question in. And I had this whole agenda and I didn't get to do anything with it. And I was like, oh, well, that leaves you 30 minutes of her maybe answering questions. Maybe he doesn't actually have that much to work with. And when that helped me frame it as like, why is he talking so much? Why is he talking about the wind, the kinds of wind that can be in a place, you know?
That was a two-hour session. He interviewed her many times. Oh, several times, like 9 hours here, like, you know, and that whole thing in this episode now where he's interviewing her as she's going to she's in London.
Okay. I wondered about that because he does say, like, Shima, the producer, Shima Oliai, Shima and I got to talk to her one more time or something like that. Mm-hmm. And that made me think maybe he's trying to make three episodes out of this one block of time. And that would explain that it just feels a little spread thin. You really actually don't get her voice that much. And he mentioned that she talked for 90 minutes. And I'm like, well, why did I only hear her voice for 4 minutes in this episode? Mm-hmm. You know, so I know that there's a lot going on with Dolly. And I just wanted a little more. I want more Dolly. There's still four episodes left. Maybe one will just be like, roll tape. And it's just me listening. But
I had the exact same reaction to that comment about the night where she answered a question for 90 minutes. I just wanted, if nothing else, a bonus episode that is the raw audio of her talking. Because I think what I enjoy the most about Dolly Parton and about the experience of going deep on Dolly Parton is I like hearing Dolly Parton talk. Dolly Parton is an enormously appealing person. And we're getting so much of his take on her when she's right there talking about herself. On balance, I enjoy the experience of listening to this show. I have been eager to listen to each episode. But I think there is a little bit of a larger issue with this show that really frustrates me. Early in the very first episode, he mentions her Q score, basically a measure of how of her popularity, of how appreciated she is in the marketplace, and establishes she's enormously popular, but she is also like the least unpopular. And in that same episode, he asks her about feminism.
Do you think of yourself as a feminist?
No, I do not.
She shot that right down.
I think of myself as a woman in business. I love men. And I really, because I have a dad, I have all those brothers, all my uncles I love, my grandpas I love, and I relate to them. And I write a lot of songs about women because I am a woman, or I just write songs that women experience. But I write a lot of songs for men. In fact, I've had hit songs, you know, by men. I write songs about my dad, the dinner bucket song, every time I hear the sound of a train coming down.
That's like a relatively evasive answer. And it follows this whole discussion about this theory of Dolly Parton as the first third wave feminist. And that involves explaining what first wave feminism is and what second wave feminism is. And she gives this kind of dodgy answer. And it's not really until episode 5, the one that dropped this week, that they start to kind of try to unpack how evasive she is about politics. And to me, what that gets at in terms of my larger frustration with the show is Jad Abumrad is fascinated with her ineffable magic, but not terribly interested in her savvy, her shrewdness as a business person.
I wonder if that's ever happened to another female artist. Ever.
And I feel like in a lot of ways, he has this way of making her both more complicated and less complicated than she is. That like a lot of the her decision, for example, not to talk about politics is about maintaining that Q score.
It's a marketing decision.
Is a marketing decision, and frankly, a pretty understandable one. And yet, the show doesn't really bother tangling with the persona that she's crafted, and is much more interested, it seems, in like describing the different kind of winds that flow through the trees in the Tennessee mountains.
I have to say, I agree with the overarching point, I think, that you're making, that there is probably too much kind of magic talk. But I think on the feminism answer, I would strongly disagree. I don't find "no, I am not a feminist" to be an evasive answer. Mm-hmm. I think many of her other answers are evasive. I think she comes by her rejection of that label very honestly, to be truthful. But I get what she's saying. And there was a terrific thread on Twitter by a Twitter user named Rachel, I don't otherwise know the name, who really explained that from her perspective, Dolly Parton is like a lot of poor rural white women who felt that feminism in the 1970s and 1980s was simply not interested in them. And if anything, was embarrassed by them and refused to engage with their issues. And what it reminded me of was Terry Gross's interview with Lizzo, where you learn that for Terry Gross, the way that Lizzo posing nude on an album cover was sort of like anti-feminist in a way. And the only thing maybe that would make it feel brave was that she is a fat woman. and otherwise, that's cheapening yourself, essentially. And they had a great conversation about how differently they come to that question. And I think for Dolly Parton, who was exposed to a lot of feminism in the 70s and 80s, as somebody who not only was very, very country, but also was kind of a sex pot kind of on purpose and enthusiastically so. And she will tell you she's made a lot of boob jokes. But at the same time, she also kind of got stuck in that, I think, especially in the 80s for a long time in particular. If you heard the name Dolly Parton, you were about to hear something about boobs and not about music. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think she honestly rejects that label because she is not happy with her experiences with feminism. For me, they fuss around with the music a lot. Yeah. And that bothers me. It bothers me when they take a song that's in a major key and isolate the vocal and put a minor key under it so that it, because they're in a sad part of this. I mean, I that stuff I don't like. And here's a clip. I want to play this clip of Dolly Parton kind of singing a song casually during an interview while a version of it plays under her.
And separation comes no more. And if we never meet again this side of heaven, I will meet you on that beautiful shore.
They're not in the same key. It makes me want to tear my hair out. You can do that bit. Jessica Reedy has done similar bits even on our show, that audio production idea of sneaking up the music underneath what she's saying. And in terms of the sound design, a couple of you have mentioned the kind of like little bits of things. And I want to play you a clip also of when they're explaining her relationship with Porter Wagoner, who was a very established country artist who put her on his television show, which is kind of what originally made her famous. And they worked together and had a very, as she puts it, love-hate relationship. When Jad is explaining that relationship, there is this clip.
Everyone we talked to told us that from the very moment they started, those duets...
Well, that was magic. It was like...
A combination like this.
Fred and Ginger. John and June.
Thought you might want to kiss me goodbye.
Tracy and Katherine Hepburn. There's just keep going with those kind of people who just clicked.
We had a great blend in our voices.
So I know who Fred and Ginger are. Mm-hmm. If I didn't know who Fred and Ginger are, that clip doesn't help me. That's what makes it feel over-designed to me.
There's a lot of talk about, like, she won't get political, and so she won't be divisive in that way. She's a connector, not a divider. But I think that's right there in the music as well. I think of her as a folk singer more than I think of her as a country singer. And when she talks about the old country, she means the British Isles, you know? Mm-hmm. She's a folk singer or country singer with no boogeyman, and that's so unusual. She grew up poor, but her songs aren't about hating rich people. She grew up country. She doesn't sing about hating city people. Like, we didn't have all these fancy things. She doesn't say that. She just describes what she loves. She even writes these proto-feminist songs without pointing at the patriarchy. She's mm-hmm. just saying, I'm going to write a song about abortion or miscarriage or young women abandoned by their partners. And I'm not going to say it's political, but you hear it. And of course it is. Of course, you're devastated. And that's because it's a political...
Right.
You know, so she... It's frustrating that the episodes that felt the most disjointed had some of the most interesting content.
I mean, I engage with her as an incredibly smart businesswoman who is also someone who has been incredibly rich now for a very long time, is very protected by security and staff and managers. And I think, you know, to some degree, she doesn't want to talk about politics for the same reason a lot of rich people don't want to talk about politics, which is it's unpleasant and I don't have to think about it if I don't want to.
One other interesting political thing is in the episode with the, I agree with you, Linda, non-evasive answer about feminism, I was glad that the point wasn't belabored, like, does it break your heart, feminists, that Dolly isn't a feminist? I'm perfectly comfortable like letting that remain complex. And I do think that Jad does a good job of then bringing in guests that highlight how a person might live a feminist life and not claim that word. And that's
right.
Ultimately, I really like that about the show. He asks these tough questions, some of which I hope that he gets back to.
Yeah.
But so far, I think he's doing a good job of highlighting, like you were saying, Glenn, giving us all enough to chew on week to week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I enjoy this show on balance. You know, when I'm picking apart this show, I'm picking apart something that I'm still finding very engaging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to keep coming back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know if I'll finish it or not. I'm not sure it's 100% up my alley production-wise, mm-hmm. Enough to keep going, but I have been interested in hearing more about her. If you haven't had a chance to hear it, Dolly Parton's America is 5 episodes in as we tape this. They've got 9 total, so check it out. See what you think. And come and find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet at us at PCHH and tell us what you think. When we come back, it's going to be time for our favorite segment of this week and every week, What is Making Us Happy This Week? So come right back.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Today Tix. With the Today Tix app, getting tickets to your favorite shows is a fast, easy process. This Cyber Monday, use Today Tix as your go-to hub for everything from theater and arts to comedy and opera. Try Today Tix now by going to todaytix.com/happyhour and use promo code HAPPYHOUR to get $10 off your first purchase.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Capital One. With the Capital One Walmart Rewards Card, you can earn 5% back at Walmart online, 2% at Walmart in-store, restaurants and travel, and 1% everywhere else. When you want all that, you need the Capital One Walmart Rewards Card. What's in your wallet? Terms and exclusions apply. Capital One N.A.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It's time for our favorite segment, What is Making Us Happy This Week? Steven Thompson, what is making you happy this week?
The first album in 6 years from a wonderful band called Anamanaguchi. Now, Anamanaguchi mixes live, mostly instrumental, very hard-charging and uplifting music with the sounds of video games. They use, like, hacked Nintendo hardware to create a kind of chiptune hard rock hybrid that is incredibly cheerful and uplifting. They perform in front of gigantic screens, beaming cartoons on them at all times. Let's actually hear a little bit of a song called The CRT Woods. So as you can hear, there is this kind of massive kind of emotional sweep, this digital sheen, and above all, this fist-pumping, hard-charging sense of joy. The new album is called USA by Anamanaguchi.
Thank you very much, Stephen Thompson. Glenn Weldon, what is making you happy this week?
I want to recommend the series Dickinson on Apple Plus, which is, I'm not recommending because I think it's great. I'm recommending it because I can't figure it out. And that is great. Haley Steinfeld plays Emily Dickinson in what is on one level a very sincere, straightforward, earnest biopic series, but on the other hand is I don't know what. On this show, everyone speaks in modern slang, what up, Emily? And it takes her poems stupidly literally, and Jane Krakowski is playing her stepmom, who says things like, you'll be the ruin of this family with your headstrong ways, Emily Dickinson. Now, let's agree, all of that is just bad. But is it, though? Because given all that, and especially with the presence of Jane Krakowski, it feels like nothing less than the 30 Rock parody of Emily Dickinson's life that you would see. So it exists in, I'm going to say it, a liminal space between really sincere and really funny, and I don't know how it's going to land. I've only seen the first 2 episodes, but I have a feeling it's going to settle down. But right now, it's a very fun, very confusing place to be.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Glenn Weldon. Dickinson on Apple Plus. All right, Katie Pressley, what is making you happy this week?
Autumn is making me happy this week. Every year when fall comes around, I have 2 things that I do every single year. One is I queue up the 8.5-hour slow TV NRK knitting evening, which is 8.5 hours of a group of women in Norway trying to break the record for a back-to-back sweater, which means from the minute the sheep starts to get sheared until the minute the sweater is completed and on someone's back. So I have watched every minute of this multiple times. And I queue up my old library card and I check out the Nordic cookbook every single year. This is a giant, hang on, I'm going to lift it up and try to tell you how many pages it is. 767-page cookbook. It's by Magnus Nilsson. I find it so perfect for this time of year because it's all about foods that take a long time to cook, but they're simple and they're hearty and they'll get you through the winter. The Nordic cookbook. I should also give you the disclaimer that this is the kind of cookbook that has recipes, for example, that say time, 5 minutes or more. Serves one or many. Ingredients, as many eggs as you need. If that is going to drive you crazy, it's 767 pages of that, so gird yourself. But if you really want to dive into what is essentially a work of food anthropology, then I cannot recommend more highly The Nordic Cookbook by Magnus Nielsen.
Thank you very much, Katie Pressley. Very exciting. Like Glenn, I am going to recommend a series from a new streaming service on Disney Plus, which as we record this has just launched with a fascinating array of stuff. You will find a show called Encore. This is a reality show that reunites the cast of an actual high school musical production that was put on many years ago. And in each episode, they take, you know, for example, the first one is a production of Annie from the 1980s in a high school. And so what they do is they bring as many people from that cast back together as very much grown adults, you know, with middle school or high school kids and who've had all this stuff happen in their lives. Some of them can still sing. Some of them can't at all. And they restage Annie together playing their same parts. It is uneven. Parts of it are just weird. But there is a moment at the end of the Annie episode in which they put the performance on. And the woman playing Annie, who's kind of the most serious, was the most serious about theater. Her kids, I think, are getting to see her perform for the first time because it's not what she does anymore. It's very touching to me that the kids are seeing a really completely different side of their mom. I really enjoyed it. I have to tell you, it's sort of packaged with the Disney Plus series, High School Musical, the series, which is a real thing.
So many words.
That's a scripted show. This is an unscripted kind of companion about how important being a theater kid really is to people. And I do recommend it. It's called Encore. It's on the newly launched Disney Plus, if you're giving that a try. And that's what's making me happy this week. That brings us to the end of our show. You can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me at Linda Holmes. You can follow Stephen at I Dislike Stephen. You can find Glenn at G.H. Weldon, Katie Pressley at Love is Maroon. You can find producer Emmanuel Johnson at Emmanuel_Speaks. You can find our other producer, Jessica Reedy, as always, at Jessica_Reedy, and our producer emeritus and music director, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff, KATZIF. Mike's band, Hello, Come In, provides the music you're bobbing your head to right now. So thanks to all of you for being here.
Thanks. Thank you.
And thank you very much for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. If you have a second and you're so inclined, do subscribe to our newsletter. That's at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. And we will see you all right back here next week.
Wake up to a fresh take on the day's news with Up First every weekday morning and now Saturdays at 8 a.m. Eastern, too.
10 minutes is all you'll need to start your day informed. And now you can listen 6 days a week.
I'm Scott Simon.
And I'm Lulu Garcia-Navarro. Up First, to start your weekend from NPR News.